ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, the literary incarnation of Lord Krishna. We're going to read from the fifth canto, first chapter, verse 15. Chapter is entitled "The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata." Please repeat after me. Ishabi Shrishtam. He Avarundmahe Anga. Ishabi Shrishtam. He Avarundmahange. Dukam Sukam Va. Guna, karma, sangat, dukham sukham va guna karma sangat. Ashtaya, tat, tad, yad, ayunkta, natash. Ashtaya tat tad yad ayunkta natash. Chakshush matandha iva niyamanaha. Chakshush matandha iva niyamanaha. Isha bishrishtam hi avarund mahenga. Dukham sukham vaguna karma sangat. Ashtaya tat tad yad ayunkta natash. Chakshush matanda iva niyamanaha. Isha bishrishtam hi avarund mahanga. Dukham sukham vaguna karma sanghat. Ashtaya tat tad yad ayunkta natash. Chakshushma tanda iva niyamanaha. Isha bishrishtam hi avarund mahenga. Dukham sukham vaguna karma sangat. Ashtaya tad tat yad ayunkta natash. Chakshushma tanda iva niyamanaha. Others?
Sukham Bhagavatam Sangha.
Ladies? Can we close that door, please? That a lot of noise is coming from that side. Anybody else? Okay. Please repeat after me. Isha Abhishrishtam. Created or given by the Lord. Created or given by the Lord. He certainly. Avarundmahe. We have to accept. Anga. My dear Priyavrata. Dukham. Distress. Sukham. Happiness. Va. Or. Gunakarma. With quality and work. Sangat. By association. Ashtaya. Being situated in. Tat. That condition. Yat. Which body. Ayunkta. He gave. Nataha. The Supreme Lord. Chakshushmata. By a person having eyes. Andaha. Blind men. Eva. Like. Niyamanaha. Being conducted. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Priyavrata, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. One must therefore remain situated as he is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. Please repeat after me. My dear Priyavrata, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. One must therefore remain situated as he is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. By material means, one cannot avoid the happiness and distress unique to his particular body. There are 8,400,000 bodily forms, each destined to enjoy and suffer a certain amount of happiness and distress. This we cannot change, for the happiness and distress are ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in accordance with whose decision we have received our bodies. Since we cannot avoid the plan of the Supreme Godhead, we must agree to be directed by him. Just as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes, under any circumstances, if we remain in the condition allotted to us by the Supreme Lord and follow His instructions, we will become perfect. The main purpose of life is to follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is such instructions that constitute one's religion or occupational duty. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, Lord Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityagya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Give up all other engagements. Simply surrender unto me and follow me. Bhagavad Gita, 1866. This process of surrendering by following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not meant for any particular creed or caste. A Brahmana can surrender, and so can a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Everyone can adopt this process. Stated in this verse, Chakshushmathanda iva niyamanaha. One should follow the Lord the way a blind man follows a person who has eyes. If we follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead by following the directions He gives in the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Bhagavad Gita, our lives will be successful. The Lord therefore says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru mam evashyashi satyam te patijani priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, and offer respect and obeisances unto me. Then you will certainly come back to Godhead. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Bhagavad Gita, 1865. This instruction is meant for everyone, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. If everyone from any division of life surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God and follows His instructions, his life will be successful. The previous verse has given the analogy of bulls moving under the direction of the driver of a bullock cart. The bulls, being completely surrendered to the driver, remain wherever he wants to place them and eat whatever he wants them to eat. Similarly, being completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should not aspire for happiness or regret distress. We must be satisfied with the position allotted to us by the Lord. We should follow the path of devotional service and not be dissatisfied with the happiness and distress He has given. People in the material modes of passion and ignorance generally cannot understand the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with His 8,400,000 forms of life. But the human form affords one the special privilege to understand this plan, engage in devotional service, and elevate oneself to the highest position of perfection by following the Lord's instructions. The entire world is working under the influence of the modes of material nature, especially, ignorance and passion. But if people engage in hearing and chanting about the glories of the Supreme Lord, their lives can be successful, and they can be elevated to the highest perfection. In the Brihad Naradiya Purana, therefore it is said, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyataha. In this age of Kali, there is no other way for the spiritual perfection than the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Everyone should be given the chance to hear the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for thus one will gradually come to understand his real position in life and be elevated to the transcendental position above the mode of goodness. Thus all impediments to his progress will be cut to pieces. In conclusion, therefore, we must be satisfied in whatever position we have been put into by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should try to engage ourselves in his devotional service, then our lives will be successful. Om Agyanati Varandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Milatem Nena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. My dear Priyavrata, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. We must therefore remain situated as He is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. This is the first chapter in the fifth canto. And to summarize the first chapter, Priyavrata was the son of Manu. And he was under the instruction of Narada Muni. Narada Muni is the third in our disciplic succession after Lord Brahma and Lord Krishna. He is practically the guru of every significant personality you will find in the Shastras. So Priyavrata was to be the emperor of the universe. But being under the instruction of Narada Muni, he became a pure devotee. He was afraid that if he became an emperor, which has so much material facility, everybody knows that being an emperor is like, they have everything. So much association with materialistic persons. That's why Lord Chaitanya did not want to associate with Maharaj Pataprudha, because he was a king, a materialist. So Priyavrata was afraid that he also would become a materialist. He would be by this association. So he didn't want to become an emperor. So then Lord Brahma, this is going to totally disrupt Lord Brahma's plan, because he understands what the plan of the Lord is. The whole material world is meant to, it is a big psychiatric hospital for the crazy people of the, that's us. It's a huge psychiatric hospital full of madmen. Because we wanted to become Krishna. That's the whole, we wanted to become, we didn't want to serve. We liked the whole environment in the spiritual world. Everybody is very cultured. Everybody has very good manners. Everybody is, has proper decorum. The only thing we didn't like was that Krishna was at the center. We also didn't like so much noise coming from the kitchen. It's like a big orchestra over there. So we didn't like, we liked everything in the spiritual world, except we didn't like the fact that Krishna was at the center. Why he's at the center? I could also be at the center. Why him? So then, Krishna, being the super soul in everyone's heart, he's in the heart of every atom. He's in our. So he knew immediately our thought. So this creates a disparity in the spiritual world that, somebody is in disagreement with the Lord. It creates a disharmony. And somebody has a different desire from the Lord. So Krishna created the material world for those persons who, you want to be me? Here's a place where you can go and try to be me. The only problem is that everybody else there also is wanting to be me. So you're in a, imagine you're in a madhouse and everybody thinks that they're God. Some people think that they're God. Some people think they're Napoleon. Some people think they're, Mahatma Gandhi. Many people think there's so many things. And if you have a madhouse, what do you mean you're Mahatma Gandhi? I'm Mahatma Gandhi. They're arguing over who's Mahatma Gandhi. So that's what's in this. And actually, that's what's happening in the material world. Everybody thinks that they're God. And they're fighting for the resources so that they can be the center of all existence. They may not say that, but their actions speak louder than words, Like I always say, I don't listen to what you say, I listen to what you do. That's more, so everybody behaves that way. And obviously atheists are not going to say that they're God because they don't believe in God. But they act that way. So, it is a big psychiatric hospital, and the main physician is Krishna. His whole plan, because it's a one-to-one therapy, you know, one-to-one session. Krishna is in our heart as a super soul, and He is guiding us through. He is curing us from this disease. The whole purpose of this material is to cure us from this disease of thinking that we're God, because it's not going to make us happy. It doesn't make us happy. We can't make us happy. And also the material world is designed in such a way by Krishna to be an unpleasant place. You know, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. It is designed. It's Dukhalaya. It is a place of misery and it's temporary. You know, it's impossible to be. It's the whole idea of trying to be happy here is insane. Insanity. Once time Srila Prabhupada, when sitting in his rose garden in LA, was asked with a bunch of scientists and scholars, PhDs, and they asked him to define what is the definition of insanity. And Prabhupada immediately said, the sum total of all stupidity. So it's stupid. Imagine how stupid it is to try to be in joy in a place of misery. It can't be done. Like trying to make a roti inside a refrigerator. You know, you make a roti on a tava, over fire. You don't make it in the ice box. It's not going to work. You know, you don't make ice cream inside the oven. It doesn't happen. So being happy in a place which is designed to give misery, you know, it's. But everybody's trying, and we've been doing for a long time, very long time, from one universe to the next universe, one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda, and if we were lucky to be human beings. Just to give an idea of how long that is. If we were lucky to be human beings with a lifespan of 100 years, that would mean in each Brahmanda we had 3.1 trillion human lifetimes. Of course, we might not have been human. We could have been bugs, which makes it longer. Or we could have been devas, which makes it a little shorter. But to get an idea, that's how long. And we go from one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. Countless, that's a long time. That's why it is said that we've been eternally situated, because it's so long that it seems like eternity, but it actually is not eternity, but it just seems that way, like a dream. You could go to sleep, it's only for 5 minutes, but your whole Mahabharata went by, isn't it? You've had that experience. Everybody had that experience. It's only for, if you look up and you wake up, it's only a 5 minute nap, but the whole Mahabharata took place in your dream. Seemed like a long time. So that's when we wake up from this bad dream. We'll see only a short period of time went by, you know, in the spiritual world. So Krishna is doing this one-on-one therapy. He is guiding us through. Just like we are like blind men, and Krishna is taking us by the hand through this material process, through the material world. And any experience that we have, it's purposely given to us by Krishna. We should not lament, oh, why? What did I do to deserve this? We did something. Don't have to worry about that. We did something. Don't have to ask the question why. Just be, you can be certain that we did do something to deserve it. But, see, there's two kinds of karma. In the Vedanta and Upanishad, it describes two types of karma. Not good. I'm not talking about good or bad. The two types are Sanchinta karma, which is the sum total of all past karma, and Kriyamana karma, which is newly created karma. It's not that everything is from the past. There's newly created karma. Otherwise, if everything is from the past, then we fall into the fallacy of the infinite regress, which then means nothing ever happened for the first time. Things do happen for the first time. That's Kriyamana karma. And the past, sum total of the past karma is called Sanchinta karma. And the Sanchinta karma is divided into two subgroups. Arabdha karma and Prarabdha karma. Right? So, suppose we were to go to the Bay of Bengal. And with a glass, we take out some water. That would be the equivalent of the Prarabdha karma. The rest of the Bay of Bengal. The rest of the Indian Ocean is the Arabdha karma. So, the Arabdha karma, So when that the karma is all the potential karma. The prarabdha karma is that which is put into motion, which we have to experience until it's done. And that could take more than one lifetime. It could take 10,000 lifetimes. It could take one lifetime. Because in the next verse, it indicates that even the next verse, because it's explained in other parts of the Shastras, but the next verse explains that even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. Which means even a liberated person can take birth again according to his past karma, his prarabdha karma, because that those activities haven't been finished all yet. That's explained in the third canto, in Kapila explaining to his mother in the section on meditating upon the Lord in the heart, that he's explaining how the yogi, when he achieves the bliss of God consciousness, that just as an intoxicated man is not aware of whether or not he's wearing any clothing, in the same way, a God-intoxicated devotee is not aware of whether or not he is wearing a body. And in such a state, the Lord has to take over the functioning of the body until the destined activities of that body are finished. That could take more than one lifetime. It could take 10,000 lifetimes. But, you know, it's like, suppose you're driving in your car and you're driving. The driver falls asleep. You have to grab the wheel. So Krishna's grabbing the wheel because now the driver is not even aware that he's in the car. So that's what happens when a person gets liberated. He's not even aware of whether he's got a body or not. So it doesn't bother him what's happening. Just that in that verse, the purport Prabhupada gives the example of the fan. Somebody turn on a fan for a second. Just turn one fan on. Can you just turn on any fan? Okay. Now, that's going according to karma. Now turn the fan off. The fan is turned off. But you see the wheel is still spinning. Because the prarabdha karma is going. Now when the prarabdha karma is finally used up, the fan stops. And no more body. Because the proof that you have prarabdha karma, you just go look in the mirror. You'll see your prarabdha karma. So it's not that when you get initiated, all your karma goes, because if all your karma goes, then your body falls off. So Balabhadev Bhujibhushan explains that. That Krishna, he's a genius. He plans everything out. That he's practical. That as soon as one gets Brahma Vidya, that bhakti is powerful enough to destroy even prarabdha karma, but it wouldn't be practical. Because then as soon as a person attains Brahma Vidya, his body falls off. Then who would be left to teach Brahma Vidya? Means the bodies, they'll just be dying, but you know, as soon as you get it, you drop dead. You leave your body. Is that going to work? You know, so everybody in the initiation, yajna, they get initiated, then they all drop dead. Of course, who did the initiation? They also, but just hypothetically speaking, as soon as you get initiated, everybody in the yajna shala drops dead. Now, who is going to want to, you know, like, you might be, what was in the water? What did they put in the Achman cup, you know? Maybe it was that purple Kool-Aid, you know, some science. They don't, you know, then who's going to want to get initiated next? Everybody dies as soon as they get initiated. So you might think twice before joining the Hare Krishna movement. You know, it's not very practical. Krishna's very practical. So, but he's, a person is not, they're not disturbed by that. That's a whole other lecture. But the point being, is that Krishna is, I can give a whole seminar on just on the fate, free will, and the law of karma, and this idea. But the whole point is that Krishna is taking us through the material existence, however many lifetimes it takes, he's holding us by the hand. And he is choosing from the whole ocean of, you know, we have trillions upon, you know, brahmandas that we've gone through. There's a lot of karma to choose from. So, who decides what is going to be put into this glass of prarabdha karma? Krishna decides. He decides what reactions we need to experience in order to make advancement, to make progress, and especially in the case of devotees. But for everybody, he is concerned. You know, because it's explained in the sixth canto. Can you remember that king? Priya, not king Priya, but it was... Anyway, in that verse, it describes that for Krishna, his greatest victory is not when, you know, he kills Hiranyakashipu or Ravana. His greatest victory, he feels the greatest victory when he can bring back a soul out of the material world. He considers this a greatest victory for himself. So he's got a whole program. This whole thing is his program for curing us. So just like an artist, he's got a whole palette of colors, right? And from these colors, he chooses which ones, and he makes a picture. So Krishna, he has so much karma in that ocean of Rabda karma, and he chooses what we're going to experience in the Parabdha karma. And by the process of bhakti yoga, the Arabdha karma is all destroyed. That's what is described. That's what is destroyed when it says in the Gita that just by the action of fire, wood is turned into ashes. So what is that is turned into ashes? The Arabdha karma, that all potential karma, not the karma which has been put into action. Because if it did, repeat, your body would fall off. The gross and subtle body would fall off. You would, to appearances of everybody else, you would be dead. Which is not really a good preaching strategy. And Krishna is the supreme preacher, right? So, sometimes people, you know, they cry like, you know, why this is happening. You know, they don't understand, you know, why some suffering is happening to them. But it's for our benefit. Just like Srila Prabhupada, we may not understand, you know, like why some people are starving. So Prabhupada gave the example when he was a householder, that one time he saw his neighbor, the mother was beating one of the sons, just beating the son, just really beating, giving him a good thrashing. So he's wondering, like, why this mother is beating the daylights out of her child. So he has his servant go and inquire, like, what's going on? So then he found out that the older son, there's two sons, the older boy had typhoid fever. And so the mother wasn't giving him any food. Because in typhoid, it goes through many stages. One of the stages in typhoid is that all the intestines get abscesses. So if you eat any solid food, it perforates your intestines, you die. Yeah, you die. Because it just rips through. And that stage lasts for about 2 weeks. So if you eat any solid food at that time, you're finished. They can't do anything. You're just your whole intestines are just shredded. So he was complaining to his younger brother that, mother's not giving me anything to eat. I'm hungry. So get me something. So he went, the younger boy went and gave the boy some chapatis. So when the mother found out that she said, you're going to kill your brother. So he started beating. So the two lessons are here. First of all, the mother is starving the boy for his own good. He may not understand it because he's a little kid. He doesn't understand why my mother, she used to feed me, now she's starving me. And the second lesson is, people who think they're doing benefit to other people are actually doing them harm. Unless they know what they're doing. So we give charity to this poor, feeding this, so many different humanitarian, altruistic activities which actually hurt the other individual because they're meant to go through that for a purpose which they don't understand. They don't understand. Or I had my own experience. A few years ago I was in a horrendous car accident. You know, so, I mean, I had many realizations of that. It was horrendous. I woke up on the side of the road in a puddle of blood, in more pain than you can even imagine. I was not afraid to die because death is your friend. There are worse things than death. At that time, death is you want to embrace death. But one of the realizations I had, I could give a whole class just on that experience. But one of the realizations I had was what it means to be insignificant. When you find yourself lying on the side of the road, all in a bag of broken bones, covered in blood, then you realize what it means to be insignificant. So I always remember that. When I started thinking how great I am, I remember how actually insignificant you really are. You think you're so great? What the hell are you doing on the side of the road like this? You know? That's exactly... And material nature is extremely cruel. That's another thing. You learn exactly how material nature is very, very cruel. What are we doing here? So these experiences that Krishna puts us through, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. So it deeply impresses a samskara about what life is about until we finally, it's like sort of like shock therapy. In the psychiatry, there's electroshock therapy. So Krishna gives us sometimes shock therapy. But this, because he wasn't kidding when he said in the Gita that this is a terrible place. And he demonstrates it. And of course, he's not like doing it because he's a sadist. We deserved it. It's our own karma. He's not doing it. We're doing it. This is what we deserve. I did something to deserve this. Who knows why? I don't know. But I did it. I came to this world. I was so stupid that I decided to come here. And I did something to deserve that. But it taught me a lesson. I'm insignificant. The world is full of pain. There are worse things. Like this material world is a prison. Or Mother Kunti. She appreciated. She could understand that all the distresses that she suffered, her and the Pandavas suffered, they were actually blessings because why? They brought them closer to God. Huh? When people suffer distress, then they realize what? I am not the controller. Someone else is the controller. That's one of the big realizations. We're not in control. That's why there's a saying, in the military, there are no atheists in the foxholes. When the bombs are exploding around you, and bullets are flying over your head, when you see people on the other side getting killed, arms being blown up bits, the bodies being smashed, you realize you are not in control. Somebody else is in control. And the experiences we have, we deserve them. Not that, as I said, Krishna's not like an atheist, not a sadist. He chose our reactions, which we created, to teach us a lesson. And we have to trust that Krishna is doing it for our own good, to help us to wake up from this very bad dream. It's a very bad dream. But we think we can enjoy here. Right? Despite all these different experiences, we think that we can enjoy here. So one thing is to have trust that whatever is happening to us, whatever happiness or distress, there's also happiness. But the happiness is not enough. That what we really want. And the happiness is spiced up with a lot of unhappiness. We only want the pure happiness. And lots of it. Because that is our nature. Anandamaya Vyasat. We are pleasure-seeking entities. That's the nature of the soul. We are pleasure-seeking and pain-avoiding. But we thought that we could have pleasure by being Krishna. The fatal error which Krishna is trying to correct. There's a whole program is to correct this insanity on our part. So, another aspect of following, as mentioned in the purport, is by following the rules and instructions that Krishna gives us in the Vedas, in the Puranas, in the Smriti Shastras. By following these things, there's also direct instructions of Krishna how to live in the material world with the objective of leaving the material world. Right? Others, they're living here trying to enjoy. But Krishna provides a program. The whole program of Krishna's Vedic civilization, which is a God-centered worldview, is how to live here with the objective of leaving here. We don't want to stay. But how to do that in such a way that we can... Because we're stuck here, we have so many material necessities of just because we have this body. To call it a body doesn't really carry the weight of what it really is. Because when I look in the mirror, I don't see a body. I see a prison. It's our prison. And we're each in solitary confinement. And each of us have to suffer our own destinies. A little pleasure, a little pain, mixed together. Sort of like behavioral psychologists, they'll to get rats to do something. They'll give them a little bit of food, and that will encourage them to keep doing the things, even though there's electric shocks and stuff. But because there was a little food at one point, maybe if I keep doing it, I'll get some more. So it's a little pleasure there. We get some. If we were very pious, we'll get some people. They appear to be very happy. They have so much wealth, so much luxury, beauty, not like that. But I can assure you, because I guess one of the things that Krishna wanted me to learn through my profession as an astrologer, that no matter how wealthy, no matter how apparently well-situated somebody may appear to be to you, when they come to me, they're suffering. They're all suffering. They suffer in so many ways that you don't know about. But they're all suffering. No matter how wealthy, no matter how famous, no matter how... as I said one time, I did the horoscope of the former Prime Minister of India, and all he had to do was complain about his life. Now that's the top job in India, I think. The Prime Minister. And he was only complaining. He could have been like the fruit seller down the street, complaining about this or that. He was complaining about his life. So, the body is a prison in which we have to experience this sukha and dukkha. One Mataji was asking me, is there anything astrological I can do to become beautiful? Because she was now older. She's in her pushing 50. So this is what happens as we get older. When you're 20, you're at the peak of your beauty. But as you get older, you start getting uglier. It's painful. If you identify with your body, it's painful. You look in the mirror, and you're not seeing the same person you saw 20 years ago. Which only, when you're that old, seemed like not a long time ago. When you're 4 years old, 1 year seems like a long time, right? When you were 4 years old, if you can remember back that far, 1 year seemed like a long time. But when you're 40 years old, it doesn't seem like a long time. Why is that? Because when you're 4 years old, 1 year is 25% of your previous experience. But when you're 40 years old, it's only 2.5% of your previous experience. It gets smaller, and the older you get, 1 year becomes a smaller unit of your experience. So it just goes by faster and faster. So, as you get older, you become sadder and sadder when you look in the mirror. At 20, everybody's beautiful. If you're not beautiful at age 20, you're never going to be beautiful. That's just a fact. Beauty is only skin deep, but ugly is to the bone. That's why it's described that in the Shastra, the devas have the appearance of age between 16 and 25. That's the peak of youth. And after that, it's just downhill. And that's what's going to happen to all of us. It'll happen to all of us. So we have two choices. We want to regain that beauty. We have two choices. One, take birth again in the material world, and you get another youthful body. Right? Or, but then again, you have to go through that whole cycle. You'll be very joyful for a while, everybody's attracted to you, blah, blah. But then, that mirror in the wall, on the wall, tells you the sad story again. You get sad. You start looking for solutions, you know, Estee Lauder, to make your skin more fresh and youthful. But it's not going to work, you know. And it's, the most sad thing is you see, you know, 50-year-olds dressing like they're 20. But it's because I just saw some photos of some family members doing that. It looked pretty pathetic. But it's because we are eternal. So the other solution is going back home, back to Godhead, where we will have our eternal, freshly, ever freshly, youthful, beautiful body. Right? Whatever that might be. We could be a eternally freshful, youthful blade of grass. Whatever Krishna wants us to be. We have a choice. That's what Krishna is trying to take us, by the hand, out of the material world into the spiritual world. We just have to agree to follow Him. Because the other choice is, if we just drag our feet, you know, like kicking and screaming, not wanting to follow, we have to just take birth again. You know, that wasn't so much, you know. I've asked everybody. I've asked so many people, not everybody, but I've asked many, many people from all different walks of life, very wealthy, whatever, beautiful, youthful, even not even very old, 20, still looking very fresh. You know, I asked them the same question. They all gave me the same answer. According to your present experience that you've had so far in your life, would you want to repeat it and take birth again? Nobody said yes. They were wealthy. Some are wealthy, some are not. Some are rich, some are famous. Some is very, you know, nobody said yes. Who here wants to? Who here, raise your hand, who wants to take, who would want to, after, according to their current experience that they've had so far, who would want to take birth again and relive that? That was my realization I had when I was around 12. When I first heard about reincarnation, but previously I had some idea that I would be, had eternal existence, because after I died, my body would, they bury it, and sort of like the molecules would continue existing, and they go into the trees, and it had some concept that I would continue on that way. But then I heard about reincarnation. Oh, this is much better. It's a better idea, you know, like it's a more consistent idea, you know, the soul there and the body. Then I thought, but wait a second, the past 12 years haven't been so great. I don't think I want to take birth again. Then I realized how horrible it was. It actually is horrible to take birth again and again and again. 3.1 trillion times just in one Brahmanda, as a mean average of 100 years to a human life. One Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. Inconceivably, that's why it's called samsara. The miserable cycle of birth and death. So we have to become serious. So Krishna has come to do this. And finally, when we, after the, sort of like a blacksmith, he takes a, puts a piece of metal in the fire until it becomes very hot, red hot. And with a hammer, he starts hammering it. So that's Krishna's doing that to us. He's hammering us. Anartha Nivritti, getting rid of all the unwanted things as part of the process of Krishna consciousness, Anartha Nivritti. And then there's the rest of it. So then when we become suitable to enter again into the society of Krishna, when we become cured of this disease, mental disease, then we can be brought back into the association of devotees. That's the whole process as explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That Krishna, when Gopal Kumar finally arrived, after going through so many different, this is in the third volume, second part, when Gopal Kumar finally arrives in Goloka Vrindavan, Hare Krishna, Jai Jagannath. When Gopal Kumar finally arrives in Vrindavan, he finds out that he's the brother of Radharani. That's his swarupa. His actual swarupa is that he's the brother of Srimati Radharani. And when Krishna sees him, he faints. And he gets up and he runs toward Gopakumar and he starts embracing and they faint. And he says to Gopakumar, he says, I've been looking down that path, that pathway, every day, waiting. When will you give me your mercy and come down and come back? When will you show your mercy on me and come back? So Krishna is so humble. He's thinking, if we give him our mercy, then we will come back to him. That's how humble he is. He's such a nice person. But we are envious of him. We have that envy deep in our heart. So it's a long process. Apparently, it seems like a long process from our perspective. Just like that dream, a 5-minute dream, which seems like the whole Mahabharata, when we... Because in eternity, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. Like that dream. It was only a 5-minute dream, but it's stretched out for millions of years in our experience. So when we wake up from that bad dream, it was, it'll be in between passing a pakora. That we like, what happened? It'll be something like that. So we've tried repeating so many different experiences to try to make ourselves happy, The main experience, the main force which keeps us in the material world is sex attraction. Because it's actually a natural desire of the soul. The natural desire of the soul is to become very closely connected with somebody. That is the natural desire. The soul has two innate powerful desires. One is to become joined with somebody and to feel security. So in the material, that in spiritual world, that's Krishna. We want to be joined with Krishna, and that gives complete ecstasy, total ecstasy, and it's secure. But when we're in the material world, we still want to have that Vaikuntha experience where everything is happy, everything goes well, but we don't want Krishna to be there. Right? We like the things were going on in the spiritual world. We just didn't like that the fact that Krishna was God. We should be. So we liked all those things. So we still want that experience of being united with somebody. Right? So that, in the perverse reflection of that, is material sex. We think we'll be united with somebody. But the only problem is that the bodies get in the way. It's not soul-to-soul contact. It's body-to-body contact. So, as Srila Prabhupada explained, how people do not like to have covered sex. He was talking about prophylactics. They don't want to have prophylactics. They want uncovered sex. So in the same way, ultimately the soul wants... we want to be connected to the soul without the material bodies in the way. That creates the obstacle. It's not the same pleasure. It's frustrating. And even if the other person is a perfect person, they die. Then there's lamentation. So we've been trying to repeat the same thing so many times, chewing the chewed, and it still leads us to frustration. We keep doing it. So Krishna has given us something else. The holy name. We should try this. If we follow, instead of following the repeating the cycle over and over again of trying to get pleasure out of the same material enjoyments, we're going to get the same result. Unhappiness. Some mixed pleasures, like the sand in the sweet rice. It never satisfies us. And we keep doing it over and over again. So why don't we try something different for a change? Because the same thing is there's no future in doing material activities, because it always has the same result. There's no future there. Why repeat something which we know what is from the past and has no future? Because it gives us the same thing. We think there's going to be some excitement, but then, that happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar in the beginning, but like poison in the end. We all had that experience. But we keep trying it. So why not try a different program for a change? We all want to change. Why not follow Krishna's program of chanting the holy name? Follow that. Follow that. See where it gets us. Because, why don't we do it? Because, what is the 10th offense against the holy name? To not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and maintaining material attachments in spite of hearing so many instructions in that matter. So we actually don't think, we don't trust Krishna that if we chant the holy name, we'll get the result that he says. We want to keep trying that which didn't work. It doesn't, still doesn't work. We keep trying the same, the old habit. Why don't we just go in that direction? Take up the adventure. It's an adventure. Krishna says, what do you say in the 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita? I am adventure. Right? Anybody who's been a devotee, who actually got initiated, has your life been boring? No. My mother, when I was a child, she knew there was, if I said I was bored, she knew that there was trouble was going to happen. Because I would want something, I want to get rid of my boredom. But I can honestly say, since I've been a devotee, never had a boring day. Why? Because Krishna says, I am adventure. Krishna's always having an adventures. So the greater, we have to see what is the adventure, what is lying at the other end of chanting the holy name. Krishna's holding us. He's taking us somewhere. And specifically in Kali Yuga, the main way is by chanting the holy name. Follow that name. It's like a radar beacon. When the plane is trying to land, they have to follow the radar beacon coming there. The radio message, they have to follow that in and so they can land. So the holy name is what is it? Golokera Premadana Harinama Sankirtana. The holy name is coming from the spiritual world. It is coming. And if we follow that sound vibration to the end, where will we be? We will be out of the material world. But we have to have faith. So that's why it's an offense not to have complete faith in the holy name and maintain material attachments. We tend to chant our japa mechanically, you know, and without thinking. It's an experience. If we actually do it properly, it is an experience. It's an adventure. Where will it lead? We see, you know, people like Naharindas Thakur or Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, that they were in ecstasy. They were lamenting that they only had one tongue, that they only had two ears. The ecstasy that they were experiencing, the pleasure, the adventure, the excitement of chanting the holy name that comes with it. So we get sometimes a little taste of it, but because we don't truly dive into it. So that will be really following, you know, like blind men. We have to. When the person is blind, the other senses have to adjust, right? They have to become more sensitive. So what is the sense that a blind man increases? Hearing. We have to increase our hearing. Because we're blind. The material world is a dark place. It's dark. So we have to increase our hearing with faith that this will get us out of the material world. Krishna's almost dragging us out. And our own reactions are beating us. Any suffering that we have, Krishna might have, we created the reaction. Krishna just chose, okay, you should experience this one. You know, Krishna didn't create these reactions. We created the reactions. Remember that. Never ever blame Krishna. Never. It's not Krishna's fault. He didn't tell us to come here. He didn't tell us, you know, like Srila Prabhupada explains that, you know, when there's some war and things are going bad, that people pray to God. But then Prabhupada said, well, nobody consulted God whether we should start the war. Like that. All right, I just got the... So, any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. For everybody. For everybody. Oh yeah, of course there is. Because as you try to practice bhakti, and as jivan mukta, like a jivan mukta, that prarabdha karma becomes burnt. It's like it's still there, but it's burnt. It's like if you take a piece of cloth, right, and you light it, you burn it. And oftentimes you can still see the threads, right? You burn it, you still see the threads, but if you touch it, it just turns into powder. But Krishna's taking care of everybody. Not that he's not a, but of course, naturally, he has some affection for his devotees. But he wants everybody is his devotee. They just that they have to be preached to. That's the whole purpose of the material world. Yeah, so the Prabhupada Karma, Krishna does that for everybody, trying to get them. The whole material world is a design. The way he bring Tulsi Devi is there. Just by seeing Tulsi Devi, we get benefit. Isn't it? All the glories of Tulsi Devi. Or the sacred rivers. Or sending out devotees to distribute books. Or going on Harinam. Like we had Ratha Yatra last weekend. So many people heard the holy name. Right? That was Krishna's plan. To help people. To give them punya. So for everybody it's that way. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu? Huh?
A pure devotee's body is not material. But
what did they just say? What did they just say in the next verse? Verse 16 says, even if one is liberated, that means pure devotee. He nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. From our perspective, it may appear material, but from Krishna's perspective, everything is spiritual. To the electrician, it's electricity. He uses electricity to make something hot, he uses electricity to make something cold. To us, it appears material. From Krishna's perspective, everything is spiritual. That's our material, that's our defective vision. Like as their bodies also grow old, right? They get wrinkled. See, Jagannath Das Babaji, his body appeared to be very old, but because it's used in Krishna's service, it's spiritual. But still, it shrivels up. Diseases are there because of the sinful reaction from his disciples, like that. So, to us, it appears to be, but it's spiritual. It's spiritual. It's like prasadam. Or Srila Prabhupada is giving an example, the universal form is material. Though it's spiritual, it's manifested in the material world, so it appears to be material, but it's spiritual. That answer your question? Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu? Well, this is a whole other class, but I can give a quick response. Karma is the reactions to our previous exercise of free will. And that karma creates a situation, right? Creates a new environment in which different options are then presented to you. And then you have the choice of accepting choosing option A or choosing option B. If you boil it down, one option brings you closer to Krishna, the other option brings you further from Krishna, basically. So once you make a choice, you don't have the option of rejecting or accepting the reaction. You have to accept it. And that creates a new situation where new options. you have free will. So material life is an interplay of both fate and free will. You always have free will, but it's very small. We are not satya-sankalpa like Krishna. Krishna is satya-sankalpa. By his free will, everything is created, maintained, and destroyed. Just like, suppose you're born in the basti, right? And you think, we have choices. You can, you know, really work hard, go to school, and get yourself out. Or you can think, society has given me a raw deal. People are, you know, they owe us, you know, and you can maybe become a thief. Why should I work? You know, these people are oppressing me. I should just take what I want. That's another choice. But they both have two different reactions. Eventually, if you take the second choice, you know, thieves get caught. They go to jail. Now you're in jail. By your reaction, now you're in jail. Now you still have a choice. You can either, well, that was a bad idea to become a criminal. Maybe I should do something, you know. Let me reform myself. Let me get they have some courses in jail to get an education. Or there's so many other thieves. Let me learn from them how to be a better thief, how to be a better criminal. That goes on. You know. So you have to tell, no matter which situation you're in, you have a choice. But that situation was created by your own previous act of free will. So we always have, and ultimately we can, no matter what situation we're in, we can always chant the holy name. There's no material impediment to chanting the holy name. There was one, I remember one time about, I don't know, long in the 90s, I heard one radio report. They always like to give 4 minutes of bad news and 1 minute of something good. So, a little inspiring. This was actually, I always remember this one. They announced that there was this one French journalist who had just died. He was in his 40s, and he had suffered a stroke, completely paralytic stroke that totally left him totally paralyzed. He couldn't do anything. The only thing he could do was blink his left eye. That's the only thing he could do. But they said before he died, in that condition, he published a book of 150 pages. He wrote a book of 150 pages and it was published. So how did he do that? He could only blink his left eye. How could he do that? He was so determined that he was able to express to his friend that they set up a system. The man had the alphabet of the French alphabet, and he put his when his finger came to a letter, the man blinked. He wrote a book, one blink at a time. And then he died. That's determination. So if he could be determined to write some mundane book, what determination we should have to get out of the material world. It's only our desire. He was determined because he knew he was not going to live very long. He had this burning desire to write this book. He knew time was limited. He knew his resources were limited. He did whatever it could to do it. So what about us? Our time is also limited. And the future is not good. It's going to be the same thing. You look in the mirror and you're not going to be happy. You know. So does that answer your question a little bit? Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.